Hello, and welcome to More Than a Movie, the show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with a guest I'll welcome onto the show very shortly, we'll take a journey into the magical world of movies. And this week, it's subversive superhero movies. Yes, that's right, forget Superman's peerless gallantry, we'll ignore Batman's heavily gilded codpiece, and let's sidestep the tsunami of Marvel and DC Cinematic Universe movies crashing over our screens in recent years. You certainly don't need me to tell you about Captain's America and Marvel, or Zack Snyder's upcoming re-edit of the Justice League. Nay, today we're looking at superheroes that break the mold, whether their own internal villainy has won out, or psychological trauma has well and truly carpe'd the DM, these superheroes each save the world in their own distinctly unique and unexpected ways. But before all of that, my guest this week is Edward Thorpe. He trained at London's Rose Bruford College, as well as the Institut del Teatro in Barcelona. Ed has a bounty of theatre acting experience that includes London's West End, as well as national UK tours for plays by Noel Coward and Jeffrey Archer, amongst others. Edward has gradually branched into film acting, including here in Malta. He starred in the comedy horror short Mummy's Boy, which screened at Malta Indie Shorts in December of 2020. Edward loves James Bond and enjoys a good horror, and he joins me in the studio today. Welcome, Edward.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
Very well. Great to have you here, Ed. So, look, I simply have to start here. When we were talking about this interview in advance, you told me you dislike Hollywood comedies, which are, and I quote, simply not funny, that they are mere vehicles for stars who have lost their comedic touch. Now, I love this description, but why do you say that, Ed?
Well, you see the likes of, I don't know, Eddie Murphy and Steve Martin, Adam Sandler and people like that, and I just feel maybe they've just, it's a horrible phrase, but not past it, but I don't know, I think they should have quit while they're ahead. They made some great stuff, but I just feel they're possibly trying a bit too hard these days and probably just out to get the next buck, which isn't what you should be doing it for, so.
Right, so they should make way for the new generation, in a way.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I watch a Hollywood comedy, and I just don't find it particularly amusing when it's supposed to be a comedy. I just go back and look at films when I was a child, and I used to belly laugh at things like, I don't know, Peter Sellers' Pink Panther, and then you see Steve Martin remaking the Pink Panther.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not, no.
It's not the same.
Just don't do it.
It's not
just
the same.
Don't do it.
So, Ed, you've done a great deal of theatre acting, mainly in the United Kingdom. Now you're doing a little bit more film work. Tell me, what are the main differences that you've noticed during your work between theatre and film acting?
Theatre, I would say, is probably a bit more intense. On a film set, there is the intensity to obviously get the job done right in a particular kind of time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But the pressure isn't there as such, because you can make mistakes. Oh, no, stop that. Let's do it again.
Right.
Oh, no, you're standing in the wrong place. Let's do it again. You trip on a line.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again. In theatre, you can't do that. You can't. If something goes wrong, you've got to get on with it, and everybody else on stage has to get on with it.
Right.
And the nerves kick in, and that's one great thing about theatre, I think. Any actor who steps out on the stage is they're lying if they don't get nervous.
Of course.
But that's great. The adrenaline kicks in, and you do a good show. But as I say, yes, the idea of having the pressure of getting it right and then getting the applause at the end because you've done it right, that doesn't obviously exist in film. You go home at the end of a long day, probably 90% is just hanging around, waiting around.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't, I personally don't get the rush from doing film work that I do in theatre.
That's really interesting because, like, obviously when you do a play, you've got the audience in front of you, a theatre performance, but on a film set, you've got a very large number of crew and sort of directors and a lot of people are watching you who aren't necessarily audience. They're looking to see that you do what's done, what's needed in the right way, but you don't feel the pressure from that in the same way.
They're not watching your performance.
Right.
They're looking after their own job.
Yes.
So they're not watching you and taking in what you're doing and really getting into the character and into the what the script is. They're there, oh, they're making sure your hair's not out of place or your costume's not falling off.
So they're technical.
Yeah, they're not there watching. I mean, the director, yes, he's watching your performance, obviously. But everyone else there, they're just doing a job. So no, I personally don't feel the same as I do in a theatre.
Fair enough. Now, so also, Ed, you told me you'd love to direct something one day. So let me ask you this. If you had funds to make any production you wanted, no holds barred, as much money as you want, as many crew and cast as you want, what kind of a piece would you produce? First of all, would it be theatre or film?
I would like to direct a film.
Okay.
Which kind of goes against what I've just said.
That's fine.
But yes, I, as you mentioned earlier, I'm a massive James Bond fan, and I'd like to kind of do a spoof. I know it's been done before, like Johnny English and things like that, but I'd like to do my own take on a Bond spoof. And I go back to the original Casino Royale, which was obviously a spoof of a Bond.
Right.
Back in 1967, I think it was made. And I loved that, and the fact that they got all these major stars to be in it, Woody Allen, Peter Sellers, David Niven, all these people. And I'd like to do that, that sort of thing, a proper take on a Bond.
Okay, so you might take a classic story from spy espionage thrillers and remake it in as a sort of a homage, as a spoof of things like James Bond?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I watch things like Murder on the Orient Express, and yes, it's your typical Agatha Christie whodunit. But I'd like to do something like that in a very comedic way.
Interesting. Okay, tell me a bit about your performance style, Ed. When you're getting ready to actually perform a role, what's your thought process? Do you tend to do a lot of prep in advance? Do you make sure you've rehearsed? What's the process of actually getting up there?
For me, it's very much talking to the director, whether it's theatre or film, to get his or her idea on what they want and what they want to see. Because you could read a script and it could be the most straight, serious script you've ever read, but they could turn around and say, no, we're doing it as a comedy.
Right.
So you obviously need to know that.
That
but then
helps.
Again, sometimes you don't. I mean, they may want you to play it straight, for example. But yeah, for me, it's proper, long, interesting, in-depth conversations with the director to get their point of view. I then would then go away and put my own take on it. Yes, I would rehearse, probably in front of a mirror or something like that. Obviously, get the lines in my head. But again, with film, learning lines, it's probably not the priority, especially if you don't have many, because on a call sheet, you know exactly what pages of script you'll be doing that day.
Yes.
If you haven't got many lines, you probably just learn them on the day.
Right.
You can be as quick as that. So again, it's not the same as theatre.
Different, right. Yep. Very interesting. So Ed, today our theme for the day is subversive superhero movies, and I think you have a particular favourite in this genre.
Yes, I do. Childhood memories of Condor Man.
Who can save Princess Juliet? Held captive by the evil Count Lorca. Who can save the city? Who?
So, Disney's 1981 adventure comedy starring Michael Crawford and Oliver Reed, no less. Edward, what did you love about this film?
I've just got these memories of Michael Crawford in a winged, yellow, feathered costume jumping off the Eiffel Tower, and it's imprinted on my brain. I just love the fact Michael Crawford, for one, is in a fantasy superhero film. I love the fact that Oliver Reed is in it, obviously with Malta connections as well,
yes,
that I've realised in recent years. But yes, those images and just the idea of someone just dressing up and putting feathers on him and expecting to fly. I think it's just, I mean, we're talking fantasy here, and that's completely what a superhero should be.
Absolutely. I haven't seen it, but the trailer looked like a boatload of fun. This is great. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Ed, and very best of luck to you with your theatre and your film work. We hope that we'll be seeing lots more of your work, both on stage and on the big screen near us very soon. Thank you very much for coming on
great
the show.
Great to be here. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you. Now then, are there any subversive superhero movies that were shot here in Malta? Well, we mentioned this one back in episode 5 of the show. It's Stephen Norrington's 2003 adventure romp, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's set in the Victorian era when a group of famous fantasy, sci-fi and adventure characters team up on a secret mission.
The greatest adventurer who ever lived has been recruited to find a madman.
He's called the Phantom.
To stop him, you must lead a team like nothing the world has seen.
This film was shot in various locations in Malta, including the water tanks in Kalkara, as well as the island of Gozo. And well, arguably less of a superhero flick and more of a roundup of famous characters from fantasy literature, this one's got a little bit of everything. The Invisible Man, Dorian Gray, Captain Nemo, Mina Harker, even Dr. Jekyll bounds up here. This is a very pulpy piece of fantasy action cinema, and it was widely panned by critics upon release. Indeed, I was working as a film engineer in Hollywood, California, in the years following this film's release, and I must say, my colleagues at DreamWorks Animation spoke about this movie with utter derision. DreamWorks had nothing to do with the film, by the way. But I have to say, I rather enjoyed it. I mean, okay, it's hardly Shakespeare, despite its literary underpinnings, but I thought it was blimmin' good raucous fun, and that it pretty much did exactly what it says on the tin. Moving forward a few years to 2011, though, we have Marcus Nispel's action fantasy Conan the Barbarian. A young boy is enslaved when a sorcerer brutally kills his parents. But the boy grows into a fierce warrior and sets out for revenge.
I see a journey. A man.
Crossing the sands.
A knight.
A warrior.
Well, once again, technically, Conan isn't exactly a superhero, but he did begin appearing in Marvel Comics back in the year 1952, and that's good enough for me. Now, I'm of the age where Arnold Schwarzenegger's film version of this character holds indelible sway in my mind. And I've not seen the 2011 film starring Jason Momoa, which was shot both in Bulgaria and here in Malta. Based on the trailer, it certainly does lay on the fantasy costumes and special effects pretty thick. Call me a stickler, though, when I see movies set in time periods long gone, but the trailer then includes rock music with drums and electric guitar riffs, that really kind of destroys the illusion of it being set in olden days right from the outset for me. Do you know what I mean? But convince me, dear listener, does this Malta-shot 2011 remake best Arnie's classic 1982 version of Conan the Barbarian? I challenge ye to changeth my mind, Earth. Or something like that, anyway. Anywho, it's now time to venture beyond Malta's diamond-encrusted shores as we venture further afield for some truly subversive superhero movies. And our first film today is a 2005 dystopian action drama from the Wachowski brothers, who are now sisters, by the way. Directed by James McTeague, it's V for Vendetta. In a future British tyranny, a shadowy freedom fighter known only by the alias of V plots to overthrow the state with the help of a young woman.
Mercy!
Oh, not tonight.
Who are you?
Gentlemen, I want this terrorist found, and I want him to understand what terror really means.
We're working on several leads.
Her parents were detained when she was 12.
It was like those black bags erased them from the face of the earth.
The story is inspired by events surrounding Guy Fawkes, that famous Brit who in real life attempted to blow up the UK's Houses of Parliament on November 5th, 1605. But V for Vendetta modernises the setting and characters. Indeed, Alan Moore, who wrote the graphic novel adapted into the screenplay, took inspiration for his modern dystopia from various sources, most prominently perhaps George Orwell's classic 1984.
I wish I wasn't afraid all the time, but I am.
The The film stars Natalie Portman as our vulnerable young protagonist. She bravely submitted to having her head shaved on camera for one of this film's key scenes. And she's joined by veteran Irish actor Stephen Ray, but has the most on-screen time with Australian powerhouse actor Hugo Weaving as our masked would-be terrorist. Now, he remains beneath his mask for this film's entire running time, in what I'd argue must be one of the great voice acting performances of the modern film era. Well, there's much to say about V for Vendetta. It's a film that challenges at so many levels. Despite being, in essence, a superhero fantasy, there's a great deal of socio-political commentary, including here, in a scene where the masked crusader treats his new guest to breakfast.
Can I ask about what you said on the telly?
Yes.
Did you mean it?
Every word.
You really think the blowing up Parliament's going to make this country a better place?
There's no certainty, only opportunity.
I think you can be pretty certain that if anyone does show up, Creed, you'll black bag every one of them.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
And you're going to make that happen by blowing up a building?
The building is a symbol, as is the act of destroying it. Symbols are given power by people. Alone, a symbol is meaningless, but with enough people, blowing up a building can change the world.
Remember, of course, that the film was released just a few years after 2001's horrendous attacks on New York's World Trade Center. The movie, whilst not asking the viewer to take it all too literally, does paint a very dark vision of a Western democracy hijacked by a totalitarian dictatorship. I might also posit here that some of the supporting performances do actually fall a little bit short in acting terms. Nevertheless, what we have, in essence, is a frantically paced and superbly structured action thriller that barely gives you a chance to come up for air.
If our own government was responsible for the deaths of 100,000 people, you really want to know?
Those who are responsible will be held accountable.
The time has come for you to live without fear.
I'm ready.
What's perhaps most notable for me about this film, though, is the inclusion of an extended flashback-cum-montage sequence that does a rare thing in cinema. It takes us on the journey of a protagonist undergoing a powerful, albeit deeply traumatic, psychological revelation. I won't spoil this sequence, but to this day, I must say that herein lies one of the most emotional pieces of pulp fiction I've ever seen. It's quite brilliantly staged and pieced together, and the original musical score really elevates this sequence, and indeed the whole film, turning it into something really rather special.
Do you know why you're here, Evie Hammond? You've been formally charged with conspiracy to commit treason, terrorism, and sedition, the penalty for which is death by firing squad. You have one chance to save your life. You must tell us the identity or whereabouts of Codename V. Are you ready to cooperate?
Portman does some of her finest work here, and Hugo Weaving's vocal performance is nothing short of a revelation. The film opened to somewhat mixed reviews, but has gone on to achieve powerful cult status, especially given the symbolic relevance that the mask worn by V has gone on to obtain. This is the kind of breathtaking cinematic spiral that leaves your head spinning afterwards, finishing, as it does, with a celebrated piece of special effects pyrotechnics. Thematically, a story of self-discovery, leaving a fractured past behind, and seeing the world through the wounded eyes of another, this is a sincere and powerfully rendered entry in the subversive superhero movie pantheon. So don thine mask and pack as many knives as you can get your hands on as you strap yourself in for V for Vendetta.
I suddenly had this feeling. Everything was connected. We're all part of it. Are we ready for it?
The only verdict is vengeance.
Moving forward to 2012 now, our second subversive superhero dish of the day is Pete Travis's sci-fi crime actioner Dredd. In the future, law enforcement officers have the power to act as judge, jury, and executioner. One incorruptible officer teams up with a trainee to launch an assault on a ruthless narcotics queen who threatens to hook an entire city on her psychedelic slow-mo concoction.
800 million people living in the ruin of the old world. Only one thing fighting for order in the chaos. The men and women of the Hall of Justice.
Peace Trees is the manufacturing base for all the slow-mo in Mega City 1.
You know how often we get a judge up in Peace Trees?
Well, you got one now.
Underrated New Zealand genre actor Carl Urban stars as the eponymous Judge Dredd. And here's another performance by an actor whose face is behind a mask for the film's entire duration. Only partially so in this case, for we can see his mouth here. Our antagonist is Lena Headey, giving a compelling and unnerving turn as a ruthless gang leader. Olivia Thirlby takes on understudy duties in a challenging and physical performance. Production values and special effects here are strong throughout, and there's a decent musical soundtrack to boot. What's really notable about this film, though, is its startling visual signature. It employs a super-saturated, bleached film look, in particular when rendering the trippy effects of the slow-motion drug that's literally bringing the city to a standstill. See what I did there? And this MTV music video look did initially jar with me a little, I must say, but it really does serve the story well. The narrative, insofar as one exists, and it does, essentially structures much of this film around a very tense siege encounter after our two police officers are trapped in the Peachtree Tower building and a death bounty is placed on their heads by the sultry drug lord.
She has control of everything. Levels 1 to 200.
This is Mama. Somewhere in this block are two judges.
That's not good.
I want him dead.
We're gonna have to go through him. Rookie, you ready?
Yeah.
You look ready.
To be sure, there's lots of action and gunfire here, and some of it is very violent, so do please be warned. That said, there's a delightful focus on the developing relationship between mentor and student, taking place, as it does, under harrowing life-or-death conditions. Consider a scene in an elevator, for example, after a rather nasty incident has just occurred. A brief, wordless exchange happens between Dredd and his nervous protégé. It's surprisingly well observed, and convinces me that the director knows exactly what he's doing here with this film. And moments like this, in my view, achieve something we see all too rarely in genre cinema, or in modern filmmaking generally, really, that being imbuing characters with credibility and depth. So vital. So if you like your superhero action peppered with a dash of pathos and oodles of pulpish style, then, as your humble cinematic attorney, I do sincerely recommend that 2012's Dredd be a member of your convened jury.
It's not the law. I'm the law.
Finally for today then, we move right up to 2018 for the movie Freaks, directed by Zach Lipovsky and Adam Stein. A housebound young girl under the control of her paranoid father can't subdue her curiosity, eventually stepping beyond the confines of home into a brave new world.
Someone could have seen you.
You're on the punishment for breaking the rules.
No, Dad!
You opened the door. You almost got us killed.
Newcoming child actor Lexi Kolka stars alongside Emil Hirsch and veteran genre actor Bruce Dern. Freaks was a labour of love for its directors, a budget genre film with unabashedly high concept ambitions. The opening act is an almost lyrical portrait of a child under house arrest. Indeed, the whole film is such an intriguing blend of genres. We've got mystery, science fiction, thriller, and even some horror elements here. If you're into innovative special effects movies, I think you're in for a real treat.
You have to stay hidden.
Till when?
This is not a game.
Did you go outside?
No.
You can never lie to me.
I'm not lying.
Want to know what's in an ice cream truck? Frozen kid bodies.
Come inside. Taste any flavor you want.
Hi. You might have called me.
Indeed, so oblique is the mystery of the movie's opening act that the eventual plot developments can't really come as anything but a huge revelation. I can't really discuss the superhero underpinnings of this story without massive spoilers, but suffice it to say that I think you'll be more than satisfied as the story reveals itself, even if there is, of course, some suspension of disbelief involved. This is, after all, science fiction at heart.
You gotta be strong like your mom was.
You knew my mom? I saw mom.
What are you talking about?
What did you see, dear? They took her away.
Kolka is spellbinding in a challenging emotional role as our child protagonist. There's a great deal asked of her in scenes with both adult and other child actors, but she's more than up to the task here. As the sci-fi elements kick in stronger in the second half, Freaks builds to a delightfully dark climax. Everyone's having a lot of fun here. I enjoyed this enormously on first viewing, and I honestly can't say that about many movies nowadays. Ultimately a film with themes of rite of passage and accepting ourselves as we truly are, this is a gem of modern genre movie making. So pick your favorite ice cream from the friendly but ambiguous old man in the van outside in the street, and strap in for the Six Flags Magic Mountain roller coaster ride that is Freaks.
Any freaks who are running loose are illegal.
You better get away from my house.
So, what did you think of the movie selection in our show today? For that or any other feedback and questions, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode was written and presented by me, Andrew Bonello. A big thanks to our guest, Edward Thorpe, for joining us today, and of course to our illustrious sound engineer, Redent Abdillah. The intro music was Creepy Comedy and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io, and the clips are licensed under creativecommons.org version 4. Thanks for listening, and I do hope you'll join us for new episodes of More Than a Movie very soon.